It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. We're really excited about tonight's program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have four fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Ms. Aquilyn Kennedy, Executive Producer and Chief Brand Strategist. The second, joining us in studio, is Mr. Ben Harris, Chair of the Mobile County Democratic Executive Committee. And third, joining us by phone, is Mr. Wade Perry, Executive Director of the Alabama Democratic Party. And last, but in no wise least, is Mr. Charlie Moss, who is working the production board and keeping Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. So, Aquilyn, tell me something good.
Hey, 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 it's Thursday evening, and it is time for Tell Me Something Good. Let me ask you something. When you're feeling down, do you know where to go to find positive news? The news today is always a little negative. Well, there's a really cool app that I've just found, and I'm going to share a couple of the sites that you might want to take a look at.
Okay.
All right. So one of those sites is, oh, you know what? I just lost the site. Hold on one second. That's one way to find out just how good it is. One of those sites is positive.news. I don't know if you've had a look at that, but there's some really great information there just to keep you uplifted.
All right.
Another one is Good News Network. A third,
do you find the third one?
You know what? I'm having a very difficult time right now. I'm so sorry about that.
No, that's okay. We got two good ones.
Yeah, the Optimist Daily. There we go. It was giving me a little bit of difficulty, but you know what? Sometimes you have to have a little hiccup to make sure that you appreciate the air that you get.
Hey, I always say that's the wonderful thing about live radio. So you know it is indeed live if you got a little bobbles happening here and there. So, Aquilyn, thank you so much for that. Tell me something good.
You're welcome.
Now for the headlines. The first headline comes from MSNBC.com. It reads, "Why the Alabama Governor's Embrace of the Big Lie Matters." It was written by Stephen Brennan and published on April 11th, 2022. The second headline comes from Alabama Daily News. It reads, "Cheers, fears, as judge strikes down U.S. transit mask mandate." It was written by Kurt Anderson of the Associated Press and published on April 19th, 2022. The final headline comes from AL.com. It reads, "Alabama Democrats launch free weed website for marijuana legalization." It was written by Mike Kaysen and published on April 20th, 2022. Now, let's go to the phone lines and see if we have our first guest here. Wade, are you on the line?
I'm here.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Man, I'm doing great. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Hey, we appreciate you joining us. So here we are, Season 5 of Kennedy for Alabama. I remember when we were talking about this oh so many years ago and looking to create a place where we could have this conversation live on the airwaves as well as provide an opportunity for our candidates to introduce themselves. And it's just really nice to see us here at this point in your journey. So thank you for all the support you've given us over the years.
Well, you're welcome.
So, hey, you know, this is the first time you and I have actually talked live on air. So before we get into the issues of the day, can you just take a minute to introduce yourself to the listening audience? Just tell them, you know, where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And how did you get interested in politics?
Sure. Born and raised here in Mobile, Alabama. Went to Lyonkopf Elementary, Phillips Middle School, and then St. Paul's for high school. And had a fantastic government teacher named Victor Helmsing.
Mm-hmm.
And he required us to do hours of political service in our senior year government class. and I was one of five or six St. Paul's kids who volunteered on the Bill Clinton campaign in 1992, and I've worked in some capacity every election cycle in Alabama ever since.
All right. Well, that's great. So tell folks just a little bit about your role as executive director of the Alabama Democratic Party, and just kind of what is it that you're doing kind of day to day, and what is it that you're doing from cycle to cycle?
So cycle to cycle, it's a long-term rebuild of the party here. We kind of see it as a 10-year project that got started in 2017.
Okay.
You know, right now we're gearing up for the May 24th primary, and there'll be some runoffs after that. So trying to help county parties get trained up, providing resources for candidates, and you know, doing voter targeting and voter registration and all the little things that go into rebuilding a party and winning elections here in Alabama.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for that that brief explanation. Really do appreciate it. So, you know, one of the things that I really wanted to take the opportunity to do, because I know a lot of times folks in the general audience don't realize how often we do this, but I'd like to spend a little bit of time just talking about some issues, just to kind of get your cut, your perspective, and we'll just kind of ping pong back and forth and see where the conversations take us. Does that work for you?
Sounds great, man.
All right. So I'm just following the headlines right down. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about was the big lie. And what caused this to resurface in my mind was the campaign commercial that Governor Ivey released here relatively recently. And I'm going to paraphrase this, but basically she was saying tech companies and blue state liberals stole the election from President Trump. And that's really the first time that we've heard her reflect on the election that way. In addition to that, recently our attorney general was testifying before Congress, and he was asked whether or not Joe Biden was duly elected president of the United States. And that turned into a bit of a kerfuffle where he would not confirm that. He simply kept stating over and over that Joe Biden is, in fact, the president of the United States. So, you know, from your perspective, what's your kind of cut on that whole issue of the big lie and the fact that folks are leveraging that for potential political gain?
Well, it's a shame. I mean, the one thing that's not unique is that none of these people have been able to produce one scintilla of evidence that the election was actually stolen.
Yeah, not one.
And a little bit disappointed in Alabama media for not calling them out on it. But you know, if you think back to the Kraken, I guess the legal battle right after the election, mm-hmm. there was something like 60 lawsuits filed, and not a single one of them produced any evidence that the election was stolen. And a lot of those were heard by Republican-appointed federal judges, and some of those were heard by judges that Trump appointed. So I think so-called leaders like that do people a disservice, essentially by lying to them for political gain.
Because, sure.
again, not sure. one scintilla evidence. And I'll tell you this also. If you were to hook Jerry Carl up to a lie detector, I don't think he could pass a lie detector test that he actually believes this election was stolen. I think he believes it helps him politically to talk about it. And I think the same is true for Kay Ivey and Steve Marshall as well.
Here's the part that I think I find particularly frustrating about it. And you know that that I'm privileged and blessed to be able to ping pong back and forth with Sean Sullivan during the Midday Mobile show periodically, is that there's an element within the conversation that you can look at and say, okay. And that was the part of the argument that said some of the actions of state legislatures and some of the actions were not taken in collaboration with state legislatures, where some of those were made more by the administrative staff, the executive staff, than it was the legislative staff. And that's a real conversation that we could actually have. And we can debate rationally whether or not a person thinks an absentee ballot or a drop box ballot is the best way to run an election, right? You can be for or against that. But everyone within the states that ultimately ended up voting for Joe Biden, you know, the states that were really, really close, Arizona and Georgia and Pennsylvania, just to cite three, there was no underlying sadistic movement to try to get people to systematically change vote counts, right? And so when everything starts to go down that particular path, that's where we find ourselves diverging into silly season. What do you think?
I agree with you. I don't think there's much argument about that. The only other thing I'll point out is in those states, there are Republicans who won their elections. So, I mean, are they saying that it was stolen from Trump, and therefore, I just don't get it, man. I think it's all for political gain. I think it's dishonest. And again, would love for somebody to provide one shred of evidence for their, frankly, wild claims.
You know, one of the things that we say quite often when we're talking about things in the electoral politics industry is that you should always follow the money. And so the one kind of nail that I put in the coffin of that argument was to think that this many people over this many jurisdictions could somehow get organized and execute this type of operation with no money exchanging hands should say tell you on face just how crazy the whole idea that somebody actually stole the election truly is.
Again, I've not seen one shred of evidence that even remotely confirms the lies they're trying to spin.
Exactly, exactly. So, hey, let's move on to the next topic that we have here on the list, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, man.
So we know that here over the past week or so, we had the mask mandate that was issued by the federal government that was applied to trains and aircraft, and that was struck down by a federal judge. What was your cut on that?
Well, I don't think that federal judges ought to be making health decisions for folks, and I know the pushback will be, well, people should make their own health decisions, and people can, but it really cuts to, you know, the core of who we're supposed to be as human beings and as Christians, to look out for others, to do unto others as we'd have done to us. And you know, I wasn't the world's best adherent to the mask stuff, but you know, when I felt bad, I stayed at home. When I went to the store, I wore a mask, and it wasn't necessarily because I was scared for me,
right?
But I wanted to do right by my neighbors and not get anybody sick. And it's just disappointing to me that we, as a society, as a community, have kind of lost some of that care for each other, and consideration for others. It's not just about me. It's not just about you. It's not just about them. It's about all of us as a community,
right?
Trying to thrive together. And that's what's most troublesome to me about the whole mask thing and my rights and all that. It's about all of us.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, the whole thing turned political fairly early on, and some dividing lines were established. Just on a personal note, not necessarily a political one, I have not been the advocate of mandates, but I've always sort of advocated for clear recommendations coming from, you know, the CDC and whatever other subordinate governing bodies that there are. But again, the close and confined nature of an aircraft, it seems like with the time that we've had available, we should be able to essentially – Aquilin had mentioned this in some of our conversations, sub-segment people, so that if you wanted to be in an area with people who are wearing masks, you're able to, and if you don't want to be in an area where people are wearing masks, you should be able to. But yeah, this whole thing has continued to turn into silly season.
Yeah, and Robert, just to chime in, I mean, it's tough to do that on small airplanes,
sure,
right?
Sure.
I mean, you can't very well go to the back of a plane, and there are people in all sorts of conditions and all sorts of ages and you know, just some common courtesy, as Wade was saying, just some decency towards your fellow human being would go a long way.
Absolutely. Wade, you were saying?
I just think it's important for folks to listen to the science and listen to the doctors and make an informed decision and a considerate one for their neighbors and family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I smoke cigarettes.
Okay.
Terrible. Doctors tell me not to do it. But that affects me. That's my decision, right?
Right.
But when I go to a restaurant, I'm not smoking around kids. I'm not smoking around other folks because I've got, you know, I'm looking out for other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I completely believe in freedom. I just think that we need to be considerate and follow the science and not just, you know, whatever the red or the blue party line is.
Absolutely. Well, this actually set up an interesting, what I'll call a philosophical contradiction. We were talking on Midday Mobile earlier today about how, on one hand, from a Democratic perspective, there's advocacy for the mask mandate in transportation. But on the other hand, when you get to the issue of Title 42, there's a general reluctance to continue that after the 20th or so of May, whenever it's set to expire. Do you have a point of view on Title 42 and just kind of what's happening at the border and whether or not that's something that should continue?
So I think the border really needs some common sense.
Mm-hmm.
I look at this very locally. You know, as a port city, if you build a wall and shut down the border entirely, the problems are going to leak around the wall, right?
Of course.
And in some sense, you know, tightening up the border in New Mexico actually makes us more vulnerable here on the coast. I mean, bad things and bad people are going to happen, and they're going to get in. But I think we could be smarter. I think we could use technology. I think the wall was a waste of money. I mean, it's already fallen down. People are sliding through it.
Mm-hmm.
But the technology's out there, the thermal imaging stuff, I think in using our intelligence can apprehend the bad folks and make things safer without wasting billions of dollars on a wall that doesn't work.
You know, it's interesting. I actually had this conversation personally with Senator Doug Jones when I was prepping to have my on-air debate with Representative Bradley Byrne. And he literally laid out the laundry list just the way that you talked about it. So if you're trying to be sensible, you're going to use technology, you're going to use drones, you're going to use people. In some instances, a physical structure like a wall would make sense, right? It just not sea to shining sea. And so it's just a shame that we can look back, you know, two decades when both parties in Congress were trying to come up with comprehensive immigration reform. And literally at this point in time, we're all dug in to the point that nothing can go forward, even something as simple as what it is that we would do for the DACA community. So any thoughts about the DACA community and a potential path forward for those young people?
We got to do something. Look, this is a nation of immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. There's no way around that. I know that the far right folks don't want to acknowledge that, but I mean, I believe in a melting pot. I believe in diversity, and I believe that people with different ideas and different cultures only makes us stronger. I feel terrible for the DACA kids.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it goes back to, you know, not everyone's a Christian. I am. And again, I believe that we have to do unto each other and do unto the least of these. And this certainly falls clearly under that mandate.
You know, it's interesting making a reference to Christianity. And we just had Resurrection Day this past weekend. And just kind of thinking about, you know, the great commandment, which is the commandment to love God and to love your neighbor as yourself. I'd be interested to have the philosophical conversation to understand how trying to go through some sort of process of expelling the DACA kids is loving your neighbor like yourself, you know.
Well, so. And look, it's not just Christianity. I mean, every single major religion in the world has some element of the golden rule, right?
Absolutely.
There's a reason for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes you a good human being.
Exactly. Well, hey, thank you for your thoughts on that. I know I went on a little bit of a tangent, but I did want to pivot back and talk about the final headline because this one actually kind of shocked me today. So I was reading through and I saw a headline from Mike Kaysen, who we know is one of the reporters out of the Montgomery area. And he talked about the Democrats launching a website in support of marijuana legalization. So can you just let me know what the thought process was behind that and just kind of what the advocacy is at this point in time?
Sure. And we actually did this last year as well, didn't have a website. But the fact of the matter is that this is the single easiest thing we could do to make the biggest change in Alabama.
Okay.
Look, when you put somebody in prison for a nonviolent marijuana offense, we could send them to college for what we are spending to train them to be criminals in prison.
Okay.
It just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one side of it, right? But the other side is the potential revenue that's there for expanding recreational marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hundreds of millions of dollars. You look at Colorado, you look at Washington State. in places that have done this, you not only see a reduction in opioid addictions, you see a reduction in alcohol deaths. There are just all these social costs that are out there that can be avoided. And I'll tell you one other thing.
Okay.
Two other things, actually. One, folks in Alabama are pretty good at growing stuff, all right?
Yep.
It's something we do well. And number two, in terms of criminal justice reform, the marijuana, in practice, our marijuana policies are racist.
Okay.
In practice. Five times more likely to go to jail for a marijuana offense if you're African-American than if you're... I mean, let's face facts, man. If I'm rolling down the road with a tiny little bit of weed in my car, I'm not going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've got that privilege, right? I'm a white male. I might get arrested, might have to show up in court. I'm not going to jail. And it's not fair that somebody looks like you might. Mm-hmm. When I know it's just not right, man. And it doesn't make sense economically.
Yeah, let me make one comment on that, and I'm going to circle back. So when folks have a tendency to look at the studies and they control for income and education, when you actually line up along offenses and stops and whether or not that stop terminates in somebody going to jail or not, you can literally line that up and see that it's different based upon race. And so,
there's no question about it.
Yep. Absolutely no question about it. So that is actually a larger conversation about our criminal justice system and what it means to have liberty and justice for all.
Well, yeah, and well, Robert,
if you look at the website, I mean, free weed, obviously, it's a little bit of a hook, right? You want to catch some eyes, some guerrilla marketing stuff. It's going to be ongoing. But really, the website is to educate folks as to those disparities and to the opportunity that's there for legalization, as well as the need for decriminalization and criminal justice reform as it relates to marijuana. That's what we're talking about.
Sure. Ben.
Yeah, just to pick up on the point about the criminal justice system, and Robert, I may have alluded to this on your show at least once before. You know, we've been out in the neighborhoods trying to register folks to vote and things like that. And when we got started a year or two ago, I think it took us 4 months to find a young black man who thought he was eligible to vote.
Right.
Out in the neighborhoods. And so much of that had to do with small marijuana-related offenses.
Mm-hmm.
And if nothing else, addressing that issue, I think, is a very critical thing, because we are losing a huge segment of the population that we just do not need to lose.
Absolutely. And I think Wade alluded to something, and I just want to make sure it's clear for anyone who may be listening. So there are typically two steps in this conversation. There is decriminalization, and then there is full legalization. So, Wade, just to be clear, what is the advocacy of the state party at this point in time?
Both.
Okay.
So, let me tell you where this came from for me. I went to the very first medical marijuana commission meeting in Montgomery a couple years ago. And I looked around the room, and I saw lobbyists for Anheuser-Busch. I saw lobbyists for tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
And it just clicked in my mind that these folks aren't here for medical.
Right.
They're looking ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, I don't know that this is public knowledge. Some folks are in the know. They know that. But Anheuser-Busch has already invested in hemp farms.
Okay.
And when the medical licenses go out, they're going to be in the middle of that. But Marlboro's already designed the green pack of cigarettes. As soon as legalization happens, they are ready to go.
Gotcha.
And they're there because there are millions and billions of dollars to be made. And we're where we are because, A, we don't want to miss out on that money. There's no rule that says Alabama has to be last in everything.
Right.
But, B, it's got all of these other upsides in terms of criminal justice reform and general fairness.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer to me. I know it's going to take a little time, but it's worth pursuing, and I'm proud that we're doing it.
All right. Well, hey, Wade, we're coming to the end of this particular segment. I wanted to thank you so much for taking some time to spend with us this evening. We got about 30 seconds before the break, so if anyone wants to learn more about the State Democratic Party, how can they contact y'all?
ALDemocrats.org. We've got a Twitter account, Facebook page, all that good stuff.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Wade. We'll look forward to talking to you soon. Okay, man?
Hey, thanks, Robert. Enjoyed it. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Aquilin.
Thank you.
All right. Well, hey, you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of times people don't understand the conversations that are happening behind the scenes, and they don't understand the challenges associated with trying to run a party. So with that, we have come to the end of our first half hour of the program. We're going to take a little break, let our sponsors get a little love, and we will see you guys back on the other side. You have been listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just joining the broadcast, in the first half of the show today, we had Wade Perry, who is the executive director of the Alabama Democratic Party, who was our guest. We had the opportunity to talk through four issues, which is actually a lot given the limited amount of time that we had available. But, Ben, there was one issue that we didn't have the opportunity to touch on that I'd like to talk to you a little bit right now, and that is the recent confirmation of, what is it, Associate Supreme Court Justice in Waiting,
yes.
Jackson. So what was your cut just kind of watching that whole process proceed?
Well, I mean, first, wow, right? I mean, if that doesn't make you believe in the possibilities of this country,
mm-hmm.
I don't know what is. That photo of her daughter.
That was a classic, wasn't it?
If that didn't warm your heart, you don't have one, right? I mean, it's just a thrilling thing. I think, obviously, she's an extremely well-qualified person mm-hmm. to be on mm-hmm. our Supreme Court. I'm proud that she's going to be there.
You know, it was interesting. I was talking about this on air at a different point in time as well, was some of the confirmation hearing digressed into silly season, right? And that silly season happens on the left and the right. So I'm not saying that it's only our friends in the GOP. But the one thing that was interesting to me was the fact that nobody was questioning her qualifications, because the qualifications were unquestionable.
Absolutely. And you know, politics is politics.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she handled it with grace and
yes.
class and poise that is frankly rare in those proceedings, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've seen them get contentious, as you say, on both the left and the right. But I can't think of a better example of how to handle that than we witnessed Associate Justice in Waiting, Jackson. So.
Absolutely. So I think that will tie off the federal issues, at least for the time being. Is it okay if we spend a little time talking about stuff happening here in the state?
Shoot, sounds great.
So I've been asking a lot of people about their reflections on the 2022 regular session here in the state of Alabama. And so we know, from a positive perspective, there were some good things that actually ended up happening. One of the things that we thought was the additional funding that was provided for our teachers.
Yes.
So did you have any reflections on that or any thoughts you'd like to share?
Well, I think the job that our teachers do day in and day out. I mean, I'm sure there's the occasional, you know, bad apple, but just about every teacher that you meet is someone who loves the children that she or he is teaching
mm-hmm.
and lifts them up and is trying to help in every way possible. And I think doing what we can for them, goodness knows it's a thankless job.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
But there's no more important job. And the to help with resources, with pay. I mean, the number of stories that we've heard over the years of teachers who come out of their own pockets and
mm-hmm.
and goodness knows there's not much in those pockets to begin with, who go to buy supplies or go out of their way, go the extra mile for a child in the class. It's just they're heartwarming stories, and I'm glad that something good is happening there.
Yeah, absolutely. We could never pay them enough to dedicate their lives and their careers to the education of society's children, but we can definitely pay them too little.
Well, you think about, you know, you see the outrageous amounts of money that maybe some less admirable celebrities are able to make.
Yes.
And you compare what they're contributing or not contributing to society compared to what a teacher does. And that really puts it in perspective, I think. Anything that we can do for our teachers is a wonderful thing.
Absolutely. And the other thing on the positive side, I'll actually call out two. One, Aquilin had mentioned in last week's show, was that in the general fund, the dollars that were dedicated to postpartum have actually increased. So originally, there was only about 60 days of funding, and that actually went through to a full year of funding, and that is fantastic. Aquilin, what are your thoughts?
No, absolutely. This has been a long, long, long time coming. We've had some really fantastic support with some of our representatives, Representative Hall, Representative Wood, Senator Madison Coleman, and Representative Klaus. Bipartisan, everyone loves moms, and they need more than 60 days of support. And this is clearly a huge win, 365 days of support, and we hope that the state plan amendment gets drafted and enacted so that it will last for multiple years.
Yeah, and that's great. So we know that this is only the first step in the process, that there will actually be multiple steps that we need to go through. The other thing that was really good was there was some money that was put in there for mental health issues as well. And that actually ended up being a good thing. So it actually looks like we have a caller who is calling in. So let's go to the phone lines and see who that is. Hello, you're on the line with Kennedy for Alabama.
Hey, Robert, this is David from Mobile. How you doing this evening?
Hey, Dave, how you been, man?
Pretty good. I wanted to talk about the Conjee Brown confirmation for a minute from a conservative libertarian point of view.
Please.
First of all, I found her to be very qualified as a judge with her experience, but also as a conservative libertarian, I like the fact that she comes from a criminal defense background, especially a public defender background, because I think our criminal justice system, especially at the top of the U.S. Supreme Court, has swung more towards statist rights and statist point of view than a individual rights point of view. And I think that as a criminal defense attorney, she'll bring that individual rights point of view back into perspective on the court.
That's actually interesting. And thanks for the call, Dave. I know I hadn't heard your voice in a while, and it's good to hear your voice now. So tell me more about what you think the mix of people should be from a philosophy standpoint.
From a philosophy, for me personally, whenever I vote for Supreme Court justices on the Alabama Supreme Court, for example, I usually try to pick an equal number of Democrats and Republicans and independents, because I think there should be a balanced court and a robust argument from all sides with a middle that can swing both ways, because I think that's where you get the most protection of individual rights. And as a libertarian, protection of individual rights is important to me. Like, for example, I think we've swung more towards the statist side than we need to be. Like with qualified immunity, for example, do you know the standard to get qualified immunity is there has to be no other precedent within your appellate circuit of the wrong that you are accused of committing to get qualified immunity?
Well, Dave, I haven't actually spent a lot of time reflecting on qualified immunity, but I tell you what, go ahead and hit me up offline. We'll talk about it, and we'll figure out how to put a show around it, because I think that would actually be a great thing for us to talk about on air.
Sounds good.
All right, man. You be safe out there on the road, okay?
All right.
All right. Talk to you. All right. So thanks a lot to Dave for calling in. So one of the other things that I wanted to touch on briefly was we spent a little time talking about the positive, but there were some things that came out, particularly at the end of the legislative session, that we found a little bit concerning. And that was primarily related to how the government was starting to sort of pass judgment on the behavior of individuals in the transgender community. Do you have any thoughts on that, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I think unnecessary, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
Embarrassing to put maybe a stronger word around it.
Right.
But also, I think, very insensitive and cruel. I mean, these are folks who have a hard enough time as it stands.
Right.
And I think the notion that they're some sort of threat that we have to be protected against is not only, frankly, insane, but cruel.
Right.
And I think that it's a shame. I can't imagine that there is a serious thought that we have an issue that actually needs dealing with here in Alabama. And so I think it's pure politics, and I think it's a shame.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those things. We talk about them as red meat issues, no pun intended, and they're all designed to solicit an emotional response. But at the end of the day, there are people behind all these decisions. And quite frankly, we as an adult population are probably a little bit more concerned about it than the kids are actually concerned about it themselves. So, you know, hopefully as we leave this legislative session and go into the next one, we'll find, you know, some more positive things to be able to focus our time on. There was one thing that was continuing to run around my mind, and this serves as a little bit of a connection between what Wade was talking about at the state level and what we're talking about here at the local level. So I know next week there are going to be some statewide candidates who are here. So just from a county perspective, talk about the statewide candidates and how it is that we provide access for them to have an opportunity to talk to us.
Sure. Well, in terms of the local party, of course, we meet monthly. We meet on the fourth Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. Get in a little plug there.
Shameless plug.
And we have, as always, extended invitations to each statewide candidate when she or he is coming through Mobile to come speak to us. And several have taken us up on that, and we've got a few scheduled for next week. So if you're interested,
that's great.
You know, we'll be at the West Library on Greelot Road at 6 p.m. next Thursday night.
And I think that's really one of the things about the basic organization of the party, because you have something happening at a state level, and then you also have something happening at the local level. So if you want to see somebody, invariably there's going to be an opportunity to do so. And that actually fits very nicely into what our theme was for Kennedy for Alabama this season, is that we wanted to make sure that we gave an opportunity for those statewide candidates to be able to come share their views with us on the air and ultimately get those views to the listening audience. And so that's part of the reason why we wanted to be in Montgomery and Huntsville in addition to Mobile, because we know that the power of radio extends well beyond, you know, the power of the watts of this station.
It certainly does, and I'm so grateful to you for doing that, and I know the candidates are as well.
Mm-hmm. And so that, from a scheduling standpoint, will actually start next week, where we will have two of our statewide candidates. I'm going to hold off on the names here just for the time being, but we have one candidate who is running for the governor of the state of Alabama. We have one candidate that is running for United States Senate. And then the week after that, which would be May 5th, we have a second candidate who is running for United States Senate and a candidate who's running for Secretary of State as well.
That's great. That's terrific.
Yeah, man. It's actually a labor of love thinking about where we were when we started this journey and how hard it was during the time that we were on the ballot to get that access to the airwaves. And so definitely want to give a shout-out to Sean Sullivan, the team here at FM Talk 106.5, Dale Jackson up at WVNN, and the folks we started working with at News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery, because they saw the value of being able to have an additional voice and were willing to provide us with that opportunity to provide what was happening on the Democratic side. So with that, we're going to go to our last break of the evening. And then we will be back to wrap up the show. You have been listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. During the last segment, we had a fantastic conversation with my friend Ben Harris about a number of topics that we weren't able to cover during the first half hour. And we also ended by giving a little bit of insight into what was happening in this season of Kennedy for Alabama. So just to summarize, if you guys are tuning in here at the end of the show, our primary focus for this, call it pre-primary period, is to talk to party leaders, talking to Ben Harris now. We had the opportunity to talk to Jason Fisher last week. We also had the opportunity to talk to Wade Perry. In addition, we're talking to journalists. We had Josh Moon, who was on last week, and we have some other journalists that are confirmed in the weeks ahead. We're actually really excited about two of the conversations. One is going to be with Secretary of State Merrill, where we'll have the opportunity to talk a little bit about what's happening and what the requirements are for voting. We have an extension out to one of our former governors who we're looking to have join us here as well. But the bulk of the time is really going to be focused on candidates. And we know that FM Talk 106.5 here in Mobile, News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery, and WVNN in Huntsville all have a number of primarily GOP candidates who interview on their stations. But this is going to give us here at Kennedy for Alabama the opportunity to introduce some of those statewide candidates on the Democratic side to you as well. So with that, I'm actually going to segue back over to Ben and just ask him, take your perspective as a county leader. We talked a little bit about what you were doing for the statewide candidates, but also give us a little flavor for what's happening with some of the local candidates as well.
Well, sure. Starting, I think, here locally, we've got, of course, our usual we're very proud of our legislative delegation, mm-hmm. and who are Democrats, and they're all running for re-election. I think only Senator Figures is opposed in the general election, which okay. I think speaks very well for the record of our legislators, and we look forward with confidence to Senator Figures also being reelected with what mm-hmm. we hope is ease. And in terms of here locally, we've got a district attorney candidate, Moshe Donald, who is just wonderful, a wonderful candidate for district judge, Jackie Brown, and an exciting young candidate for sheriff in LeBaron Perkins.
Okay.
And a young man who is, I think, on his way to big things in politics. And I want to put in a plug for a statewide candidate who is a local product. We'd like to brag on our Mobile folks who are running statewide, and that's Pam Lafitte, who is running for Secretary
yes,
of State.
Yes,
very proud of Pam. She's currently in law enforcement in the sheriff's office, but believes deeply and strongly in voting. And the Secretary of State races, if you've paid attention to the news, we see in the midst, and we alluded to it a little bit earlier, the election controversy and how important those secretaries of state are.
Mm-hmm.
And having the right person there who can take the right stand and uphold everyone's right to vote and stand behind the integrity of our elections, I think is critical. And I can't think of a better person to do it than Pam, and I think she's a wonderful candidate.
Absolutely. And then I wanted to touch on one thing. I don't think I heard you say that. I believe there is one contested House race in District 99.
There is. Our representative, former Mayor Sam Jones, mm-hmm. is an incumbent running for re-election, and he is opposed by a local businessman named Levi Wright.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the things that I learned during the time that I was going and pursuing elected office was the role of the executive committees. So I know at the state level, there are some things that are happening here from an electoral standpoint as well in the primary, and then there are some elections that are happening statewide for the state Democratic Executive Committee, you know, in the late summer, early fall. Can you talk a little bit about that process and just
sure.
kind of what happens there?
Sure. The structure of the parties is that the membership There's some at-large seats, but the membership is, to a great degree, elected. Okay. Some of these races that you see on your ballot, you're not quite sure who the folks are and what they're running for. And I'm on that ballot usually, and so I appreciate folks paying attention to those. But yes, there are elected seats with both the state and the county party.
Right.
And that is the official organ of the party. So that is who you qualify with. It is who would decide election contests, at least in primaries, and things like that. So, and the parties serve a very important role and a very important function. And of course, we love all, and you know, on our side, all Democrats and everyone who participates in politics. But there are certain folks who are actually elected members of the county party, and that's what that process is.
And that's kind of like the official structure, right? The people who are actually sitting in those. And the other thing that I don't think people always realize is that those individuals are actually elected by their House district, and that there is a requirement for balance between men and women. So there's one representative.
That's right. And then the at-large seats are largely, although not completely, to achieve racial balance.
Okay.
And then we also have at-large seats here at the county party for the youth. And one slight amendment to what you just said, at the county party level, we are elected by county commission districts.
Oh, okay.
And then at the state level, we are elected by our state representative districts.
Gotcha. And in the case of the Democratic Party, I don't know exactly how the GOP does it here in the state of Alabama. All of this stuff is open to the public.
Yeah.
And so I remember during the elections that happened at the state level in 2018, Aquilin and I took a drive up to Montgomery, and we actually sat in an auditorium at one of the theaters, and we were able to watch everything actually happen in real time. And so although there was some controversy that came out of that particular election, to be able to be in the room while it was actually happening and see it, I think positioned us very well to have a perspective on what ended up happening.
It does. And if you're interested in politics, and all of our meetings are open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're interested in politics and how it actually works on a local basis and on a sort of daily in and out basis, you're free to come to our meetings, and you know, there are no secrets. We are wide open.
There are definitely no secrets.
I know, right?
For better or for worse, right?
How can people reach you or the party?
Well, we have Wade made a reference to aldemocrats.org, which is the state party, and the contact information for the county party is there. We also have MobileDemocrats.org, which is our website. And then we're also up on Facebook. There's a group that's called Mobile Democrats, and I think we've also got a page. I'm learning all this terminology. And we got a Twitter account and all of that kind of good stuff. But if you go to those websites, you'll see our contact information right there.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much, Ben, for joining us. This has been another great episode of Kennedy for Alabama. Tune in next week where we actually start interviewing the statewide candidates. So until then, my name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama.